It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday the 16th of May 2015. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Oneroa. On Saturday the 16th of May, Brent Simpson talked to Matariki Roach, the outgoing Waiheke rep on the Auckland Youth Advisory Group. He talked with local board chair Paul Walden about the Marine Reserve Survey and caught up with Stefan Klist, host of Sails, Whales and Whiskies on Waiheke Radio. Then he talked with Kirsten Simmons from Y Talks. You are listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
That's right, you're listening to Island Life here on Waiheke Radio, and first guest up this morning is Matariki Roach, who is currently the Waiheke representative on the on the Youth Advisory Panel. So we're going to talk a little bit about that, and the and just her time is nearly done on the panel, so we're looking for a replacement. Welcome, Matariki. Let's try another one. Well, there we go.
That better?
Yep.
Ah, sweet.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have you on. And we were just chatting a little bit before we were on air about your and I'd heard a little bit about the Youth Advisory Panel and about the replacement that's coming up because you're about to leave, but I didn't realize that you'd actually been doing this for quite a while, since 2012. Can you give us a little bit of background as to how this got set up and maybe how you got involved? And yeah
sure thing. Well, originally there was this Foundation Youth Advisory Panel, which was set up by the mayor as a replacement for the youth mechanisms that happened before the amalgamation of the super city. And so what they needed to do was basically they wanted to get one representative from each local board to sit on this panel to basically advise council on anything to do with young people, or to set up events, or to do projects and programs and stuff for young people. Mm-hmm. Basically to do anything positive for young people, which is pretty awesome. And so 2012, around about July, nominations went out for Waiheke, and I was one of five people who stood, and we had elections, which were held on like the 2nd of November or sometime early November, and we had like barbecues and nomination, voting slips and stuff, and it was all proper and professional. It was pretty exciting.
Yeah.
And once the votes were counted in and stuff, I won, which was really, really thrilling. It was really awesome. And basically, from then, I had a little bit of a break just to set up and learn a little bit more about it. And then in the beginning of 2013, I kind of had my first meeting and we kind of just started going, which was pretty cool.
And so when you say you're going, were you going into town for meetings with all the rest of the representatives from local boards?
Yeah. So we have, every 6 weeks, we have a meeting in the town hall, which is pretty professional. We get to sit at the council table.
Right.
And all 20 other of the members sit, and we get people to present to us from different departments of council or any other organisations outside that might want to have something to do with us, which is pretty cool.
And so, you know, things that come out of your group, they get fed back to up into the council, to level of the mayor and other organisations? Is that how it kind of works?
Yeah. So we have a liaison councillor who basically, if there's anything happening in any of the council meetings to do with YAP or to do with any young people, she kind of feeds that to us and feed to her. But usually it's quite direct, so we'll write a piece of policy or we'll write a submission or something, and then they'll be sent through to the specific department that we want to affect, which is pretty cool.
Nice. So you've really kind of, I mean, you must have been pretty younger, and then, I mean, now you're what, 15?
16.
So when when you actually got elected, you were like 12.
I was 13 when I stood, which was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was the youngest. I was the youngest on the panel.
Is there an age sort of range that the you know, in the thing, or are they mostly high school?
Yeah, so it's open from 12 to 24, but unfortunately, I'm still one of the youngest. Yeah. So the median age is kind of end of high school, university age, but that's kind of dependent on the population area and what age is the usual for that.
Yep.
So obviously for Waiheke, we have more of a stronger high school population than we do of uni students.
Yeah, sure.
Whereas the Waitemata Local Board, for example, has a very high uni student age. So,
what were some of the, you know, the high points of your couple of years on the board? What are the, you know, the out, what kind of outcomes did you see that really you thought were significant over the couple of years?
There's one major thing which I think has been so amazing, and basically we've built the Youth Advisory Panel, or YAP for short, around, which is the I Am Auckland document.
Okay.
This is a plan that we wrote basically to give direction on anything to do with young people, about how young people should be treated, how they should be involved, how important young people are, basically. Yep. So originally it was called the Children and Young People Strategic Action Plan, but that wasn't too youthy, so we were kind of like, no, thank you. And so then we named it the I Am Auckland document. And we basically wrote this, developed it, did all the publicity for it ourselves, and it was with co-governance. So basically anything that we did was matched with council, so it was a real team effort, which was really cool.
Yeah.
So it's actually one of the first models, first examples of this model in the Southern Hemisphere and the Asia Pacific region, which is really exciting.
Right.
So kicking off that, which is cool.
Yeah.
And from that, we've done a whole heap of other things, like the I Am Auckland Awards, which are actually happening at the end of this month for Youth Week.
Okay.
Which is basically where we have an award ceremony, basically to celebrate and acknowledge any young people or people doing great things for young people.
Right.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
So do you see the, over the couple of years, have you seen an increase in the influence of this youth voice on, on some higher levels of politics in the council? I mean, do you think that you're, is it really, you know, is this a good vehicle for youth to actually really make some changes? And what kind of changes do you think are the most important for young people to advocate for in the council on that level?
Yeah, I think it depends on which region you're in. So I'm a big believer that local, doing things on the local level always gets things done faster.
Yeah.
So we've, as part of my YAP position, I created, with the help of the local board, created the Waiheke Youth Voice.
Nice. Yep.
And every local board area now has one of these, which is basically like a YAP, but for the local area.
Yeah.
Where you can do events or policy writing or anything really to do with young people, which is awesome. I think it's great, and I think that that's probably one of the strongest way that we can get stuff going quick.
Yeah.
Because clearly sometimes with council it takes a little while to get things through because of how massive we are. But I think our influence is growing as our name gets out there a bit more as well. I think name recognition, and once people start to know the Youth Advisory Panel and stuff, it gets has a little bit more weight.
Sure. I mean, is there, I think, I'm not sure what the minimum age for a councillor is. I thought there was a councillor that was 21, actually. So do you think that some of your peers who have gone on through the Youth Advisory Panel may have aspirations for council positions in the future?
Definitely.
All of them.
Yeah, I have a friend particularly who's really, really into this all the council stuff, and he's like, I can't wait to turn 18 so I can stand.
Is that when you can stand?
Yeah, 18? As soon as you can vote, you can stand, which is good.
Of course, yes, that sounds good. All right, and that sounds really interesting. I mean, it sounds like every 6 weeks you're going over for a meeting, and presumably you've got quite a bit of stuff going on in between, reading if you're making policy and things like that. So it's quite a serious position or responsibility. And your time is up? Is that because are you sort of stepping down, or is there a natural term that rolls over in this?
Yeah, so our term is every 2 years, and except my term was slightly longer because we were one of the first rotations.
Right. Yep.
But so my term finishes. My last meeting is actually this May, but the next meeting is July, so I kind of go until July.
Yeah.
But I could stand again, but obviously I'm going to do some other things. I'm actually going overseas, so I kind of want someone who's a little bit more stable and present to be on YAP for us.
So how will this? You said the first time around there was elections. So how will people find out about if they're interested in standing for the next one? What do you have to do?
So if you want to get involved, we are again going to do elections.
Yep.
So nominations forms are available from Video Easy, Waiheke High School, and as of Wednesday they'll be available at Waiheke Primary as well.
Okay.
And nominations close on the 5th of June, And then on the 19th, so 2 weeks later, we're going to have election day, and it's going to be quite similar to how it was run the previous time, so back in 2012, where we'll do like barbecues and stuff at the schools, yep. but we'll also have voting booths at both ends of the ferry, and we're also going to do the supermarket, and we're going to have someone running around to restaurants and stuff, so any young people who are working and stuff still get the opportunity to vote.
So who's eligible to vote for this thing?
Anyone aged between 12 to 24 who lives on Waiheke.
Okay, cool. And how many people do you think will stand? Do you have an idea? You don't know?
It's still really early on in nominations, but I know of two who are definitely going to stand, which is really exciting. And they're quite young as well, which is really good. So they're going to be quite vibrant and present, which is awesome.
And so, I mean, you sound, you know, like you had, it was a great experience for you. And so, you know, you would obviously recommend, what kind of person do you think it takes to do this? And why would you particularly recommend the experience for someone? What did you learn from it the most, you think?
Oh, there's so much stuff that I learned. I think a huge part of it was being with people who are like-minded, who are also really passionate about young people and who wanted to make a change and could make a change. And I think that was one of the biggest things that I realized was, you know, we're this group of young people who can go out and do stuff. Like we can just do stuff, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And I think it does take up a bit of time, so you do have to be quite dedicated to it. But it's definitely worth it. You learn so much. Like, I've just matured so much in terms of what I've learned.
Yeah.
Not only about policy writing, but like for example, like event management and volunteering, organizing and that type of stuff. It's really cool.
And has it inspired you to follow in your mother's footsteps or any other kind of political aspirations after this, or maybe a different?
I don't know. I kind of realized halfway through my term that I really wanted to do something for young people with my life, and I'm really good at arguing, so I think I'm gonna go into law and do youth law or something like that.
Yep.
So maybe later on I'll go into politics or something. Yeah, but I want to do my groundwork first.
Yeah, sure. And it must have been an incredible insight into, like you say, some of the bureaucracy and the procedures that go along with council, which a lot of people may not actually, unless you've been to some of these board meetings and experienced some of this, you might not understand how kind of tricky it is, eh? And how much stuff kind of goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's crazy amount of work behind the scenes, especially with like little words or something, tiny word changes that seem really insignificant, but they are significant. It's like, ugh.
Well, that's excellent. So I'll just remind people that the nomination forms, if you're out there listening and you know someone who you think might be a good representative for a Waiheke on the Youth Advisory Panel, you can nomination forms are available at Video Easy at Waiheke High School and also soon at Waiheke Primary. And you've got, I think you said the 5th of June was the projected election date for this. So
that's when nominations close.
Oh, that's when the nominations close.
And then on the 19th of June will be our election day.
19th of June. So you've got, you've only got about a month, really.
Yeah.
More than a month. So, if you're interested, get in touch with the school or someone who will get you a ballot, get yourself on the ballot. And I'm sure Mata would probably be available for anyone who wants to have
definitely
a chat with her and get a bit of an
hit
insight.
Me up on Facebook.
Yeah, that's right, on how it might be. But it sounds like it was a really positive experience for you. And
amazing.
Yeah. Okay. And thanks a lot, Mata, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And really appreciate the work that you've done on the panel over the last couple of years. And hopefully we get an incumbent with as much passion as you've shown over the years. So thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. That was Matariki Roach speaking about the Youth Advisory Panel. And it sounds like a really great initiative by Auckland Council to get youth involved in something which is important to all of us on so many levels, it seems.
Waiheke Radio. I'm
going to talk to Paul Walden now about the Marine Reserve Survey. I've actually filled mine out. It came in the post for me a couple of days ago, and I imagine it did for most people. I filled mine out, and it was an interesting survey, I thought it was. And so we're going to talk a little bit about some of the questions that have come up over the last days about the survey, maybe some clear up a few misunderstandings, help you fill it out. So if you've got the thing, don't throw it away, and have a look. Paul, welcome to Island Life.
Good morning, Brent. How are you?
Good. Chuck your headphones on there. It'll help us all out.
Cool.
Because you'll hear you and we'll hear you. Okay, welcome, Paul.
Yes.
So, Marine Reserve Survey.
Yes.
How did this come about? Well, it's been a long time sort of in the wings, hasn't it, really?
Yeah, it has been a long time in the wings. And I think if you look sort of back to the genesis of the Hauraki Gulf Marine Park Act, which was brought in, 2000 by Sandra Lee, we've got a strong history of advocacy in the Gulf, around the Gulf environment. Yeah. The Hauraki Gulf Forum has produced, as they're required under the legislation, a series of state of the environment reports, and over recent years they've highlighted a pretty sad state of the environment in the Gulf, and really put the challenge out to the Hauraki Gulf Forum and the communities that we need to be doing more in the way of environmental protection and restoration.
Yeah,
and so off the back of that, we've had a group in the community, Friends of the Hauraki Gulf, that have come up with a proposal which has been quite contentious.
Yeah,
And then we've had another group in the community who have called the Save Our Beaches.
Yeah,
And they've highlighted some legitimate concerns around some of the effects that marine reserves can have on populated areas.
Yeah.
And so the thrust of their opposition is very much focused to a series of northern beaches. So the local board, over a period of time, has been trying to sort of cut through this, really, and we developed a local board plan last year and planted a seed in there that we should be looking to develop a network of marine protected areas that links the islands of the Gulf or the Waiheke local board area, which is all of the islands of the inner Gulf, so from Rangitoto right down through Motutapu, Rakino, Motuihe, Waiheke, and then down the bottom end to Ponui, Rotoroa, Tarakahi Rock, and others. You know, so it's quite a big area that we're talking about here, so we don't need to be sort of fighting about some beaches. Really, I guess fundamentally the purpose of the survey is to establish a series of principles which we as a community can say, we can put our hand on heart and say, yes, we buy the challenge to do more in the space of marine protection, and what principles can we put around where we might establish marine reserves. And so, if that's going to be, other than on the busy beaches, well, let's own it, let's put that on the table and move on. Or if it isn't, then that's fine. Let's have that conversation. But I think so. One of the challenges here for me is really to make sure that the community is well aware that we're talking about all of the islands of the Gulf.
Right.
And we have a huge coastline. I mean, in Waiheke alone, I think there's over 130 kilometres of coastline.
Right.
So there's tremendous potential.
Yeah.
And the other thing I just wanted to talk a little bit about is the difference between a marine protected area as opposed to a marine reserve.
Yeah, I think that it was my first think when I opened the form, I kind of had anticipated, this was going to be about Enclosure Bay. That's what I kind of thought, marine reserves. But actually, as I read through it, I was introduced to this kind of new concept, which I didn't really know much about, the marine protected area, I suppose, versus the marine reserve in a way. So what kind of is the difference between these two things?
So I think if you were to identify marine protected areas as a spectrum, and I think at one end of the spectrum, at the highest end, you've got marine reserves.
Okay,
They are no take. Okay, right. So you don't take any fish, you don't take any shellfish, you don't do anything that's going to sort of damage, nature's doing its thing. And we've seen marine reserves of that nature up at Goat Island.
Yeah.
And they need to be part of a network.
Is the Goat Island one part of a network? Sort of, I mean, there's a string of them.
So there's only four reserves in the Hauraki Gulf, and so there's not a network as such, but I guess part of this sort of the bigger picture plan, and there's a whole lot of different work that's taking place at the moment. Yeah. We've got the marine spatial plan that's taking place in the Gulf. The national government's talking about introducing a new set of legislation to embrace marine protected areas.
Yeah.
Anyway, at the other end of the marine protected areas spectrum would be, for example, I guess the least level of protection would be an education program. So, putting signs up at the beaches say, Finding Nemo, fish are friends, not food necessarily. That sort of thing.
Okay.
And then you've got any number of things in between. So, at the moment in the Gulf, we've got a group who have called themselves Revive the Gulf.
Okay.
And they've been reseeding mussel beds, and so they've been collecting Mussels that have been rejected for commercial sale from mussel farms, and they've been dumping these in locations around the Gulf. And so we've got these sort of prolific beds on the floor of the sea, which provide a great habitat and a resource for shellfish.
Yeah.
And for the whole sort of food chain.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's one of the things that we've lost, and where so much of the Gulf was shellfish beds historically. So another layer of marine protection, which is one that the government's talking about, is areas of, no dredging.
Yeah.
Recreationally and commercially. And so we've already got some layers in the Gulf. You know, there's already some restrictions on where commercial fishing can be. There needs to be some conversations about, some restrictions on recreational dredging, which would fall somewhere in that spectrum in between of marine protected areas. There's a big disconnect between restrictions on recreational fishers as opposed to commercial fishers.
Yep.
So at the moment, if you're a recreational fisher, the fish that you catch have to be a lot bigger than what the commercial guys can catch.
Yep.
And that needs to be addressed, you know. And then the fishing techniques, we've got some commercial fishing techniques in the Gulf which are just really damaging.
Yep.
And we've got much better technology that enables them to still, run their business without being so harmful on the environment. So there's a range of things in between, but we need to identify areas that, that as a community we can say, we're happy to ring fence philosophically these principles. And it might be, for example, some of the things that some people have been talking about is the fact that we've got a whole lot of conservation islands in the Gulf.
Yeah.
And so you go to Motuihe or Motutapu, it's an island that's owned by the Department of Conservation.
Yeah,
it's press-free, it's
predator-free. Yeah, yeah.
It's, the whole thing is about nature and restoration. And so do we look at extending that? Are there parts of a coastline around Waiheke where similar principles should apply?
Yeah.
So
this, in some ways, seems to be clarifying the debate which has emerged. What are some of the reactions that you've seen in the community to the survey? I mean, there's obviously some extreme reactions, and have you gauged some of the reactions from at the moment just by talking to people who have filled in the survey? And
I think a lot of people that I've talked to, have read the survey, value the survey.
Yeah.
I think the survey is very good.
Yeah.
It's certainly creates a good platform for community to share their views. There's a lot of concern when you start talking about change.
Yeah.
And, when it's something new, I mean, we've got one marine reserve down the bottom end of the island, but it's not in an accessible place.
Right. But they're not necessarily a marine reserve. I mean, one of the things that I was thinking about when I was reading it is that the marine reserve doesn't necessarily have to be accessible. Is the point of a marine reserve... I mean, sometimes I think the image of a marine reserve is the Goat Island, that a million people snorkeling, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
But my impression was that, no, a marine reserve could actually be somewhere even offshore to some extent, which is just there for its ecological regenerative properties.
And
is that something that sort of – is that correct?
Yeah, look, absolutely. I mean, there are some – there is some science, and I guess once we arrive at a layer of community principles, we can then encourage the science to support the next layer of informing.
Yeah, that's.
But one of the themes that's coming out, and we see this around the coastline in Waiheke, is the importance of the coastline.
Yeah.
And so this is like the nursery ground, really.
Right.
And again, it's that whole sort of Finding Nemo thing. You've got the seaweed and the shellfish and the crayfish and everything sort of interexisting in there.
Yeah, yeah.
So coastline is really important. It's probably the habitat that we've got to be looking at. So, that will be part of the conversation. But absolutely, the reserve is about restoring the marine environment ultimately.
Yeah.
So And I guess that's part of this conversation. We've got to put aside our perceptions a little bit.
Yep.
But that's some of the risk. That's some of the fear that's out there is, oh, my God, if we put a marine reserve here, it's going to totally change the way that the world exists.
Yeah.
And, suddenly we're going to need a high-speed rail network through the island to get people through there. So there's all of that fear and concern. And it's not uncommon. So some of the information that are on the website with Colm O'Brunton that are doing the survey, one of them in particular is a research document from the Department of Conservation looking at the social impacts of marine reserves. And it sort of talks about this concern that would be before a reserve is established And then the reaction from the community a couple of years later, once it's there, where it's, you know, almost universally supportive.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so... So there's some valid concerns. It's good that we hear them and get them out there. But
When do you expect to have collected all this data by, and when it is collected, it will be published presumably by yourselves. Colmar Brunton will publish a report.
So the survey closes on the 25th of May. Okay. So Monday week.
Oh yeah.
So get your surveys back in. You can do them online as well. And then it will be a series of weeks, a matter of weeks before that information is reported back to the board.
Yep.
It will also be fed into the marine spatial planning process for the Gulf.
Okay.
And I guess that's part of the impetus, or it is part of the impetus as to why we've done this now, is really to inform that process.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we've got this whole sort of marine spatial planning process running through, which hasn't had a heavy input from the Waiheke community. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that process is an Auckland-wide plan, or is it?
Yeah. So it's the entire Hauraki Gulf Marine Park, which runs from Rodney right down through around to the other side of the Coromandel Peninsula.
Yep. It's huge.
It's massive, right up to Slipper Island area. So you've got all of the councils in between, Department of Conservation, primary industries, fishing industries.
And so this would be our piece of that puzzle, presumably.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll just inform it. And I guess a part of that, communities or anyone in that position of a plan-making process will be have a little bit of a phobia about interacting with, such a diverse range of communities views, even on Waiheke.
Yeah.
So I think it's a golden opportunity. So, just encourage people to get in and fill it in.
Yeah, definitely.
And it doesn't matter what your views are, whether you're for or against or different areas. Have your say, it's your chance.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I know it was a fairly clearly, laid out survey. I filled it in about sort of 10, 15 minutes.
Yep.
And it was interesting to see that, because I think, like I mentioned before, thought, it was about marine reserves. But actually, it's not just about marine reserves. It is this kind of spectrum of things that we could do that would have different impacts and different effects on the Gulf. So, yeah, encourage you to fill that out. You've got till the 25th of May, which is, what did you say, Monday week.
Yep.
And it went to everyone, all sort of ratepayers on the island got a copy of the survey.
So the survey's gone to every registered voter on the island, so that captures 94% of people that are that are of voting age.
Yeah.
And then it's gone to all off-island ratepayers.
Right.
And so we've captured a spread of, which will enable a good scientific analysis of...
Yeah, and how many would you anticipate to get back on a survey like that? So there's probably like 8,000?
I mean, look, it would be nice to get 50% return.
I mean,
if we look at something comparable to an election. The reality is, I think you've got sort of an element of polarised views and some people that are well-informed either for or against.
Mm.
And then a lot of people sitting in the middle that need to sort of upskill themselves or just sit at the high level and say yes or no.
Oh, that's good. I'm be looking forward to the seeing what the results of it were. So anything else for you, Paul?
No, that's all for me this morning, yeah. So
good.
I'm going to go and enjoy a bit of TEDx.
You're going to go, oh, are you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was down at the school, they were setting up TPs and speakers and all kinds of things, so it looks like I can't be buzzing down there at the moment, probably.
Yeah, be a good day.
Good. Well, thank you. That was Paul Walden, chairman of the Waiheke Local Board, talking about the marine reserves survey that is being conducted at the moment to look at the health and how we might protect the Gulf. Make sure you check your mailboxes for that. And like he said, you can also go online if you need to fill out that survey. Now, we just spoke to Paul Walden, and we're talking about... The state of the Hauraki Gulf and all things watery. And so it gives me great pleasure to introduce our next guest, Mr. Stefan Klist, who you regular listeners will know from the Sails, Whales and Whiskey show, which is on Saturdays at 1 o'clock. And is a show, a unique show, which, and the reason I brought Stefan in, actually, or asked him to come in, is because the show's been featured in the Herald last week, and it was quite a stellar write-up of your show, Stefan. So welcome, Stefan, to Island Life. You've been on Island Life before?
When I first started the show, Dave had me on to talk about the
show.
Shanties and stuff like that.
Sweet.
Yeah, man.
So, yeah, for people who don't know, Sales, Wales and Whiskies is a show. The tagline is actually quite classic. Hits from the 1800s, isn't that what it is, Stefan?
Yeah, man.
And the show features, sea shanties and other tidbits around that particular genre. And I remember when I first heard the show, I thought to myself, yeah, how many of these is he going to be able to do? You know, he's not going to be able to sustain this one for very long. But I thought it was an absolutely fascinating show. It did pique my interest. And that's one of the things I love about Waiheke Radio is people who come on, you know, play their passions, and you just learn so much about stuff that you had no idea was out there. And your show is just phenomenal for that. So how did the show come about?
Well, I was drunken on Facebook one day.
as you do.
No, I mean, seriously, I was, and the call went out, you know, the call that you guys do, you know, I want a DJ, and just put my hand up.
And did you have an idea that this is the kind of show you were going to do when as soon as you sort of volunteered?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, when you talk about shanties to your mates, it's almost just a novelty thing, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You say, you know, I've been like walking around people going, oh, the press has been exhausting, this shanty thing. Like, I'm going on the radio again on Saturday. But, and it's little known, and I do play on it, you know.
Yeah,
I do play that it's a novelty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I do love it. But when I first thought about the show, I was thinking about just doing traditional folk stuff, which is, shanties is a part of that.
Sure,
but,
sure.
So I don't just play sea songs and that. Yeah, yeah. It's definitely the theme, but...
Yeah. And has this been something that you've sort of collected or been interested in for a long time, or how did you sort of come into this, into learning about this? So, you know, where did your passion for this sort of start off?
I've always been a musician, but I've been in bands like sort of post-punk and hardcore bands playing the drums.
Yeah, yeah.
And one day, my sister gave me for Christmas one of those lame Irish CDs you get from the warehouse for $3.
Yeah.
And I've bought about five or six since, and they've all been crap.
Yeah, yeah.
This one I got happened to have the Dubliners and all these amazing. It introduced me to Luke Kelly and all that. And ever since then, I've just been. It just clicked, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get a type of music that just clicks with you.
Sure.
And so I love exploring all the old stuff and the histories and the and a lot of the awesome bands from the 60s and the 70s. And
but I mean, like you say, the hits from the 1800s. I mean, these things kind of go back. And in the article the other day, it talked about the work song element of it. So it's actually it is quite a long tradition, isn't it, of these songs? So you must be, you know, where I said, oh, how long is he going to be able to do this? Well, come to think of it, he could, you know, a couple of hundred years worth of stuff in there. So yeah, where is the sort of what's the bit of the tradition of these things
for shanties?
Yeah.
So shanties don't actually have the way that we know them don't actually have an ultra long tradition.
Mm.
So we're probably talking like the early 1800s, maybe the 1820s.
Yeah, yeah.
But they really came to prominence once the sailing ships started going into decline, and they couldn't afford a bigger crew.
Oh yeah.
And so if you had a big crew, you didn't need to sing because everyone had enough strength on.
Got on with it. Yeah.
Yeah. But if you had a smaller crew, you had to work in unison, and the best way to do that was to work, was to sing. And so that all sort of declined from about 1840 to about 1860. That was when all the good ones were written, really.
Really, yeah.
And then it kind of lived on and on and on, and then the Age of Sail kind of died, and then there was all these, in the early 1900s, there were all these guys running around and trying to write books and capture them all before they faded.
But right,
I think they underestimated how good the songs were.
Yeah.
Because I rile up my brother and my other friends by saying things like, you can't tell how good a song is until it's been sung for 100 years, you know.
Right.
So all these songs that, like, I truly believe that the songs are that good. That's why they've survived.
That's
so long.
Why they survive, yeah. And people keep redoing them, don't they? I mean, a lot of the stuff that you play is actually quite, you know, contemporary bands, isn't it? Sort of reinventing or reinterpreting these things.
Yeah, I tried. Yeah, Some I do play a bit of that, but I get quite wanky about it because I don't I don't like the way that they do it. Like a lot of the time, I don't because the what I love about them are the authenticity of the songs.
And
that's what I don't like about the modern stuff is that you don't get a lot of. It's mostly about the band or
hearing
my guitar solo or something like that.
Okay.
And I love that no one knows who wrote this particular song.
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
you know, you can have two or three versions that are your favourite sung by different singers, but no one owns a song. You know.
Yeah, yeah. No, that is a fascinating. I mean, when I used to do the blues show, similar experiences that we would actually sometimes we would sometimes track a single song. Through through time and then see how it morphed and I think I agree is that quite often the more recent versions of the songs were actually the poorest interpretations because of that very people are trying to adding production values and guitar solos and things like that to something that and it's interesting actually how the lyrics kind of change over time to suit the particular cultural or social makeup of the day. So how did this so you've been doing the show for what, a couple of years now? And how did this article, if you haven't seen the article, it was a good article actually by I don't remember what the author's name, but it was in the Herald, wasn't it?
Paul Kesley
and he was praising the show and a little bit of kudos for the station as well. How did that come about?
He just contacted me on Facebook.
Did he?
Yeah, I think he called me, he said his girlfriend lives here.
Oh, okay.
And he heard was listening to the station and the ad came on.
Oh, yeah.
And then he looked us up on
and
then listened to one of the shows on Facebook, which one of my very first shows.
Right.
And I've been real lazy on Facebook. I haven't put stuff up there for ages. He was really complimentary. It was a little
He was, eh?
And on the phone, he was, saying really, really complimentary stuff. And I was like, damn.
I'm good.
Well, it's more like, oh, people actually listen, because you never know.
You don't know.
Because you just do it for yourself, really. Like, you go out there and play the songs that you want to play.
Yeah, that's right.
I sort of, use it as a bit of a pulpit to tell people what I think about music. And then, and then you get no feedback, you don't know if anyone's listening, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, god damn,
someone is listening.
I should probably prepare a bit better.
I think I'm always quite surprised that you do kind of come and think, oh, no one's listening. But actually, I'm quite surprised at how many people are, and especially when you do leave that legacy of podcasts and things like that. You know, things can hang around and people have a listen and get in touch. And he was quite complimentary to the show and the station in general. And so that was great. I think it was the first time that's actually happened for us, really.
Shanties,
yeah. I mean, and so you do a range of folk music as well. And actually, quite often when I listen to your show, you're often throwing some Kiwi tracks as well. That seems to be those have been fascinating. Really, whaling songs from around New Zealand, which I thoroughly enjoy, and I like that kind of history that you get from them as well. So New Zealand has a bit of a tradition in your mix.
Yep,
definitely.
Yeah, we do. Like, New Zealand has a really good folk tradition, but it's one of those things, like, you sort of, New Zealand folk music, you feel like you got to bat for your own team, I love digging, because it's not very, there are a few songs quite well known overseas, but there's a lot of good stuff that's not well known overseas, and it's not really played here, even by the folk guys here. I love digging it out, I love, I've got all these books at home, and need to learn to read music to be able to play them properly.
Well, and you are a musician, like you mentioned, in your own right, and you do play these things as well, don't you? I've seen you guys play at various and sundry venues around, and is that still something that you're still doing? And
we so Sam, who lives on the island, and my brother, so Sam and I we've both just had kids.
Yeah,
the wives did most of the work, but you know what I mean. And so we haven't really done anything for the last year. Like, we've been looking after pregnant businesses, but now we've just started this year. We're trying to take it a bit seriously, so we've got together and cleaned up the downstairs room and lined up the instruments and the beer bottles and
So, and are you guys exploring the shanties yourself, or is it just
definitely No, we played the songs we play on the show is what we play.
Is there space for writing new shanties?
Probably.
Yeah.
But that's not where my heart is.
Yeah.
Really. Like Sam's a good songwriter.
Yeah.
But no, there's enough good songs out there that I can
keep going for,
you know,
200 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so you reckon you'll be able to, and the show, I mean, you've quite enjoyed doing the show. You've been doing it for a couple of years now, so you think you'll just keep going and
see how it goes? I'd say so.
Yeah. Well, you've just come in, you've got some new vinyl for today's show, don't you?
Yeah, new might be a,
well, yeah, exactly.
A funny way of talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. What have you got for us today then? At 1 o'clock, Sales, Whales and Whiskey will be on today, and you've got, I can see I've got Songs of the Whales. Was that a Kiwi pressing or what?
Yeah, it would have been. I'm just trying to find out when it was done. Doesn't say.
The Song Spinners.
Yeah, I've just...
It's often hard to find the dates on vinyl. I know that when I was doing my vinyl show, I'd often, like, you know, you look around, you think that that would be something that's quite prevalent on a... But oftentimes, they actually leave it off. I have to look it up in AllMusic or Discogs or something like that.
Yeah, I'd say this one's probably from the 60s.
Yeah.
Because New Zealand went through the folk revival as well.
Yeah.
And there was some really good stuff to come out of that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if this is good or not, but we'll definitely play it.
Oh, that's what, yeah. That's always a good way to run your show, really. Go, oh, we'll put this on, see how it goes. Because if it's rubbish, you could just talk about it from that angle.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if you want to read the article about Stefan's show, Sales, Whales and Whiskies, which is on Saturdays at 1 p.m., check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/Waiheke Radio, and should still be on the main wall there. And there's a link to the Sales, Whales show page as well, on both on the website and on Facebook, where you can catch some older shows, podcasts, also the Play on Demand you can check out on our website if you've missed it, and that's always good. And I should also mention that Sales, Whales and Whiskies whiskey is sponsored by Wild Days Rum, which is our, you know, I mean, what more could you really ask for, really? You know, it's just so fortunate to have someone who makes rum on the island. And then he's a great guy too, Russell Duralu, sponsors the show and does some really great work around the community, as well with Friends of the Street, and makes this mighty fine rum. Make sure you check it. Stefan will be on today at 1 p.m. So thanks for coming on, Stefan. Congratulations on the article. It was real good, and it's good to see the radio station get some bit of promotion like that, seeing as we all work so hard around here, don't we? All right.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
In the studio now, I have Kirsten Simmons, who is the organizer for Y Talks, which is an event that's every 3 months has been happening on the island. The first one was a couple of months ago, I suppose.
Yep, 28th of Feb.
28th of Feb. And there's a new one coming up on the 30th of May. So, Kirsten, do you want to tell us a little bit about the coming up event first? Or
certainly. Our next event is on the topic of light.
Yep.
So we have 8 different speakers, and they're going to stand up and have their biographical experience of the word light. And they're going to basically tell us a story.
Yep.
We are up at Cable Bay, and we're nice. Down in the beautiful wine-making area down there, which is really nice. And basically the event starts at 7, so you can come in and have a wine. Of course, they have delicious wine up there.
Yeah.
Yum, yum, yum. And the tickets are $25.
Yeah.
So it's really good. It's a night event.
Yeah.
So it goes from about 7 until 10:30, and we've got a few quirks and surprises along the way.
Nice.
The thing about these events is that they are fundraising events.
Oh, okay.
And they're for different children's groups on the island.
Oh, right.
Which is really nice. So we are supporting 3 groups at the moment. The first one being a new Steiner school from age 6+, in addition to what's happening at Fossil Bay. The second one is something called the Happy Project, which is new on the island and coming out next year. And that's basically a resilience toolbox for children. Yep. So it's going to be going into homeschools and schools and anywhere with children. And they're going to be taught yoga and meditation. And they're going to be researching about what is it that our institutions are doing to help build children and make them resilient in terms of there's a few issues going on at the moment in New Zealand in terms of child poverty and the underbelly of what happens with all that within New Zealand, which is we don't speak about too often. And then the third one is Jessie Dean, which obviously most amazing trust, and they're all helping the sick kids of the island, so we need to be supporting them big time. So it's a fantastic, fantastic event. Our first one on love, it was. It's hard to explain what happened in that little hall. It was fairly magical, and it blew out all expectations of what I thought. I sort of blew it at the end, really, when I tried to talk. I was kind of like, oh, I'm so emotional. This is amazing. La, la, la. Oh, Kirsten, be quiet.
Right. So the next event, is it different speakers?
So we have eight different speakers every single event. So as I said to you before, it's a tall order what we're doing.
There's a lot of people.
And four events.
And are they all local speakers, pretty
much? All local speakers. Yeah. And they are talking about their stories, or some people are bringing in their ideas, what they believe in. Because the speakers are uncoached, so we don't go in there and we don't go, right, we want to listen to all the talks. We want to know exactly what's going on, which is a risk, but we like risk. And it's always very humble sitting on the edge of something, I think. So we kind of get a bit of a surprise each time. We meet with the speakers and we know what they're going to be talking about. But they put that together themselves in a 9-minute challenge. So there's a very large egg timer that we have made. And each person, each person gets 9 minutes to do their thing. And we hope that they run to that. If they don't, I mean, come on, you know, it's okay.
There's a bit of latitude there. But nine minutes is a good – I just actually was the MC for the speeches at the high school yesterday.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, thank you. I think about 9 minutes is kind of seems to be around about when the attention starts to sort of phase out these days. And, I noticed the people who are right around there seem to do the best. So I think that's a good time. And so is there any other kind of conditions on the speakers? Like, I mean, as far as the theme, there's the theme, there's the 9 minutes, but apart from that, they're
we try and say maybe not too much profanity. We're looking at, but
it's open for all. Was it open for all ages?
Yeah, it is. So we've got Tia from the high school actually. She's coming to do a talk, which will be amazing. She's been on a journey herself in terms of the word light. So it's respectful though. It's reverence. The audience are there to listen. We're not listening. We want to hear what's going on. We don't want. It's got to be nice in some ways. There's not a lot of stipulations, actually. It's more about getting up there, telling us, doing your thing. You can sing. You can have a few props. Susie Newborn last time, she threw some props out into the audience for them to grab. We had Pete Reese with some wings on his back. We had Paul Bond who was singing. So it's up to about creating a really wonderful atmosphere around that topic. And light... we're noticing from what people are saying about what they're going to be talking about is coming out of darkness and coming into the light.
Right.
And there's a really nice link with people coming to the island and what happens with that. Because you do find a bit of light when you come here. It's an amazing place. So, we're really looking forward to hearing these next speakers and what they're going to say to us.
I was curious. I mean, today there's been one Y Talks, and now there's a TEDx event down at the Waiheke High School today, and I've just gone through the speeches at school, and I was thinking to myself, do you think there's a real need or a desire to hear people talk these days, given that there's so much talk going on, but it seems to be online and digital and things like that. It's written and things like that. Do you think that is there something in this kind of – is it a resurgence of listening to people speak, or is this just something that's been around that I haven't noticed?
No, I think it's a resurgence as well. Yeah. I think TED created something quite big when they had their ideas worth spreading, but I think sometimes – with technology, we're missing that connection, human connection, and the humility perhaps that goes with it. And I think for me, that's why we started this up as a fundraising thing, but it's also about listening and talking and connecting with people again, because it's very easy to be able to stay at home and kind of do your thing and have your own, which is nice too. But you're right, I think this is coming back out again and going, hey, let's make a community, let's connect back up again. And we have a solid community on the island, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying, it's how we weave between that and how we talk to each other. And so I think these speaking events, it's the year of talks.
We're
lucky to have TED here as well, and I've just been there. And it's powerful and it's wonderful. And you get to meet people that you don't know.
Yes, that's right.
And there's a lot of intelligent, wonderful, creative, diverse people on this island, and so we're getting an opportunity to see them, hear them, talk about them, talk to each other, and kind of do what we want to be doing. So it's cool.
So the Y Talks, the next Y Talks is 30th of May at Cable Bay.
Yep.
And where can you? And what about? So that's not too far away, is it?
No, we're only a couple of weeks away.
So where can we go to get tickets or find out a little bit more about the speakers? Or
sure. So we've just had a beautiful website created, which is www.ytalks.co.nz. Have a look on there and you'll see what Y Talks is, what we're about. You'll see the speakers. You'll see who's – we've just released the first four. We'll release the next four next week. You can also go down to Eclectic Boutique and they're selling tickets there.
Okay, yeah.
And also at Delight Cafe, they're selling tickets there. But the other – obviously, online you can get tickets too.
Oh, okay. Through the website.
So it's through the website, through Eclectic Boutique, and through Delight Cafe.
And so the and is there a I don't suppose this place was there? Did you sell out the last time? Or does it mean there must be not?
We did.
That many people get into Palm Beach Hall, really?
It was 100. Yeah. So we had a fire restriction with that.
Yeah.
We're also selling 100 for each event.
Oh,
that's what we've benchmarked it as. And it's kind of easier to find venues on the island that you can do with 100.
Yeah.
We're expecting this to sell out too.
Yep.
We're halfway there already, which is really great for the island because there generally seems to be a rush in the last week.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend to people to get to Eclectic Boutique and to get to Delight first. Yep. It's nice to support the local businesses, so get in there. Alternatively, you can go online and get the tickets.
Yep.
But we want to see as many people there to share these experiences and to share the community that's being created from it. So,
And I know last time Chris Walker from Waiheke Radio was down there and he recorded the talks for you. And I'm wondering if at some point we might be able to get those on our website as well or something.
He's been playing them. I think he was going to be playing a couple of them and he pop them into Dropbox for us and they're on our website.
Oh, okay, that's good.
So you can click on the old speakers from the first event and then that's all linked there. So, yeah, we're really lucky. That was really great and we're very, very stoked that you guys you're going to be at our next one and you're committed to all four.
Yeah, we love rocking up to these things with our little recording devices.
And it was good because what happened was we filmed it as well, but the filming didn't work very well.
So the audio.
So we used the audio. And so we're very, very thankful that you guys were there.
Yeah, yeah. We're good like that.
You are good like that.
Because we just...
Great chaps. Community spirit at all.
Sometimes I think, you know, we do have a... we kind of have a bit of a fascination with video around. But often I find that, you know, things that we capture that are just people speaking kind of gives you that talker element, that speak, you know, almost going where you really hone in on people's voices.
And
the rest of it you sort of fill in and it does help you kind of focus in on what they're saying rather than what they look like and what, you know, so
it's really
something
true.
To be said for the audio, I think.
I absolutely agree. Mm. And that was the decision we made after watching the video.
Yeah.
It was like, this is distracting.
It is a bit.
And then we listened to the audio and it sounded so clear.
Yeah.
So we made that decision to ask what we were going to do, and we'll listen to that, and then that will capture a whole different moment.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
It's great. It's really great.
Yeah, it's good for us too. You know, like you say, I mean, too many people think about the radio like this, but one of the ways that I've thought about our radio station for a long time, not to talk about us too much, but, you know, is actually capturing some of this audio heritage of the island. Things people speak, you know, we've got people on the website who have been on the radio or have spoken in some way, we've captured, you know, they're no longer with us. And there's a lot of things that you can sort of go, oh, yeah, that's, you know, something that happened 5-10 years ago. So that's one of the things that I think that we do that people may not, you know, think about, that, you know, it is actually capturing these things for history as well.
Yeah, creating that archive,
hey? Yeah, of people and ideas that have gone on the island. That sounds really great. I think I'm going to try and go. I didn't go to the last one, but I'll definitely try and go to one of these for sure.
Definitely.
Because I quite like the speaking events myself.
Yeah, well, you sound pretty good.
In fact, I was kind of wondering if there was some, but I'm not really into any of these things.
Really? Well, maybe you can slot in. What about a bit of laughter in there?
No, but I think, no? You know, you should talk to, I think you should talk to Dougal. You know, Dougal, it was the curator for our comedy show for years and years, okay, and years, and is also heavily involved in the comedy down here, and he is an incredible mind and thinker and... Okay. And a very funny man himself who would probably have a really unique perspective. I definitely will hook you up with Dougal for that one.
Well, that's really cool. And actually, I'm glad that you mentioned that because on our website we have a nomination part.
I'm nominated,
so you can,
now.
You can nominate a speaker,
yeah.
Which is nice because we want to hear from everyone on the island.
Yeah.
And we don't know.
Yeah,
I mean, we
yeah,
just don't know. This is a really clever island. So we have that component on there. And we've already got you know, nominations coming in for, for the next two events.
Oh, cool.
So if anyone has you know, someone that they think, gosh, you know, for laughter or for land, put it forward. And we'll contact them. And all we've asked is that you tell us who it is and then why you're nominating them. You know?
Oh, okay.
Just flick us an email. But, yeah, have a look on the website. That really makes things a lot clearer. First time around when we were doing our Why Talks, people were like, what are you doing? And we'd explain it and then it would be like, okay. But now we've got something a little bit more savvy.
Yeah,
perhaps.
Okay, cool. And then the website's whytalks.co.nz if you want to buy tickets or nominate someone to speak or just find out more information. And so you think it's something that will keep going, I mean, over the maybe next year and continue on?
We committed to 2 years the thing that I'm really looking forward to and what I'm hoping will happen next year is actually doing a kids one. So
For
on like Children's Day or something like that, it's on the back burner. There's a lot of big ideas, but possibly on that Children's Day of having a kids talk.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, some of the speeches that I saw at the school yesterday were just stunning. There were some really stellar speakers came up, and they were also positive.
Yeah. And that's what we want. We want to hear what's going on and getting these kids speaking because we know that there's a bit of a gloomy future. In New Zealand, if you're looking at statistics on things, and I think if we can get those positive voices going and talking and building that would be cool. So look out for that, people. That's what we're looking into next year. And we're committed to 2 years of this thing without question. And we're up for people joining us at any time because this is a big community. We're creating,
And so you're all volunteers as well, much?
Oh, very much. The money goes straight into what we call our nearby goodness, and that's the three groups that I talked about.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, Kirsten, thank you very much for coming and speaking to us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no problem. And we'll promote it as well on our website. And like I said, we're recording them for the organization, so that should be good. You can listen to them if you don't make it to the event, but definitely try and make it to one of these events. So there's four of them that you can go to, and they're all for a good cause on the island. Thanks, Kirsten.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onioroa.